Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files, and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation. Hi, this is Bluewater. We had promised you a live interview this evening, but for some reason, and Ed believes it's because of the small telephone company there in Rapid City, the Blog Talk radio system wasn't able to connect with either his landline or his cell number. So we got off the air, and I called Ed directly on Skype, and I recorded about an hour interview, and here it is. Hi, it's Bluewater. What, apparently, it's a problem with Blog Talk's system. So what let's do, I'm calling you directly via Skype, and it's working. So, you know, you have the time budgeted anyway, so let's just talk. It's recording as we speak, and let's just do the interview as if we're online. And I told folks they could hear what was going on if they come to the show, and they'll know to check back later. But yeah, it's been several years since I talked to you, and I'm so glad to see you, that you're doing well.
I have a good situation.
You seem to be thriving.
Yeah.
And I guess you've moved away from the Minneapolis area, and I guess you're in Rapid?
Well, yeah, Minneapolis is because of my kids are there, and then I play the pickleball, and their players are so much better there. And it's when you get good at something, you want to play with good players.
Oh, no kidding.
And I don't find that out here in South Dakota as much.
Yeah. Yeah. Have they fixed the interstate yet? I trucked for a while there, and I remember the freeways, you know, every 25 or 50 feet or whatever it is, you know, blump, you know, I don't know how they poured them in the wintertime or whatever, but what?
Yeah. Well, I play 5-6 days a week. And
really?
And I'm on the outer suburb, so in the outer suburb, you go to another outer suburb, so the traffic is not that bad.
What's pickleball?
Pickleball is a wiffle ball, the size of a baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
And it takes off real quick, but it slows down.
Yeah.
And it's a slower game, but yet very, very exciting. And people lose their arms when you play 5-6 days a week tennis and racquetball.
Oh, my God.
And when you get 55, 60, you want to have a sport, and running doesn't do it for you. You just look at a runner and how gaspy they are, and they're not really laughing.
Yeah.
And when we're out there, we're laughing and happy all the time. We're playing for 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And the adrenaline flows, and you become 21 years old the minute you step on that court.
Oh, wow. That's
and you move.
Cool.
You really, somebody lobs over you, boom, you spin, wham, run back like a 21-year-old, and let it bounce, and wham it back.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
It's exciting. It's the fastest growing sport in the country, and then
really?
Down in Florida, they will not build a resort without pickleball courts.
You're kidding.
Yeah, in Southwest. And snowbirds. They, Florida and Southwest, they just gravitate towards it. And it's so much more better exercise than stupid golf, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I live in a golf capital here. And
where's that at?
Lake Tansy, Tennessee. The top of the Cumberland Plateau. And
what's the nearest big town?
It's about... little, more or less halfway between Nashville and Knoxville.
From Nashville to Knoxville, mm-hmm. That's really golf country, huh?
Yeah.
It's boring to me, golf. I've played.
Yeah.
Just
my dad was a golfer. I was an archer, so. I mean,
were you an archer?
That's deep. Yeah, I was a world-class archer back in the early 70s.
Wow.
And,
lucky you.
That's even more more boring to watch than golf. My good friend of mine won the first Olympics, and after that, they had to figure out, they had to change the game a little bit, make it a little bit more exciting, because,
yeah.
I mean, you know, unless you're an archer, it's not really that exciting to sit back and watch somebody, you know,
yeah.
shoot it, and until the last few arrows, you know, it gets exciting.
Yeah, let me tell you, hey, grab my drink over there, will you?
Well, hey, it's good to talk to you again.
I got a glass of wine before
I get,
and I'm on a chair, and I don't want to get away from the phone.
I got my Kool-Aid here, so.
Thank you, Vim.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you.
I got a glass of Riesling wine with 5% Mike's Lemonade.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's a good drink, yeah. Whoop.
Well, you've got a new book out.
Whoop, there's somebody calling.
Oh, that's okay.
Wait a second. Somebody's calling. I'm right in the house. Hang on a second.
Take your time. I can edit it out.
Yeah, take this. Kibby, talk to Kibby. Okay. Back to you. You still there?
Yeah. Tell us what you've been up to the last few years.
This is my daughter, so it's not that important.
Yeah, that's okay. If you need to leave the phone, I can always edit it out. But, yeah, what have you been up to since... I had to go off the air in 2008. I was making pretty good money selling herbs, you know, over the internet.
No kidding.
And then on the last day, it wasn't the financial collapse that got me. The last day of it was the last leap year. A little over 4 years ago, the head of the company was a Hmong from Cambodia, and he was flaunting the. False advertising laws, and wasn't anything to do with the products. They were great, and they threw a net over him, and you know, ended up, you know, my income went from several thousand dollars a month to zero, and in December I was homeless for 15 months. But it was a journey.
Huh.
It was a journey. I figured out later on that it was something the Creator planned for me, and ultimately he led me back to Tennessee because my wife passed away a few months before the business blew up, and it was you know It was something I needed to do.
Do you have anything to do with Manitoba?
They're friends. They are.
How do you say it?
Manitoba.
Yeah.
I interviewed Grandfather Lee not long ago.
Do you work for them, or are you close? Are you the editor, or what?
No, not. I'm just a friend.
Friend of Manitoba.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not even a member, but I keep.
And where are they located at?
They're in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Oh, they are. Uh-huh.
And I've interviewed several of their elders and keep in touch with them. And I interviewed Grandfather Lee Standing Bear again.
You know, the trouble with so many Indians, they're so damn much into superstition. They really are locked into superstition, and it's really sad that because nature has no superstition, and I think that they're really off base by getting into all their little creation myths, you know. It's all bullshit.
Yeah. I've never been over there to meet them. But interestingly enough, he had an interesting prophecy that I ran across.
But prophecies are from people, you know, humans. And I just...
Yeah.
That's Christianity for you. You know, goddamn prophets are a bunch of bullshit. None of them, not one of them, ever predicted heating of the planet. None. Zero.
Well, I don't know if you remember it or not, but back in... what happened with me is on spring solstice of 1998, I was in grad school in Logan, Utah, and a voice woke me up that morning, and it just said, in the future, the year, this is 1998, remember, and the voice said, in the future, the year 2005 will be known as the year of the great havoc because the weather will become so bad that it may even shut down computers all over the planet. And wake up and write that down. So I did, and that sat on my website for years. And then after I started up the show, shortly before that, I started the show in 2004 and interviewed a guy that was associated with the renewed Sanhedrin in Jerusalem.
Yeah, and that's not superstition to us. That's the spirit talking to you.
Yeah, and he...
So that's that in our Uwipi ceremonies.
Oh, yeah.
Spirit will come in and make predictions, and they all come true. That's coming from the spirit world. But when you get some creep that just spouts off about, without any connection with the spirit whatsoever, that's what we see so damn much of.
Yeah, yeah. This one, this rabbi landed in Houston the day Katrina hit, and then the following November, he sent me a link from Toronto newspaper, where it was a meeting of UN climatologists, and they characterized the year as a year of weather havoc, hottest year on record, and they've been getting hotter ever since. So anyway, he said, "Wow," he said, "as far as he knew, there wasn't a prediction that had been fulfilled in such detail in 2,600 years." And I said, "Hey," I said, "it was Creator," and
yeah,
you know.
Right.
And you know, that's what you and I are going to talk about tonight, about your new book, The Creator's Code. And, you know, John Red Hat told me, he said the difference between, Sioux and Cherokee don't see eye to eye. He says it's kind of like the difference.
Yeah, Cherokees are white people and we're Indians, probably.
Well, yeah. He says it's kind of like the difference between Catholics and Unitarians, you know.
And Cherokees are so always trying to be so damn Indian. And if they relax and quit trying to be so damned Indian, they're better off. That's our attitude.
Yeah, they're different.
And you take a look at the Sioux. We kept our culture, language, religion, spirituality, really. Et cetera, dance. Everybody dances like us. Everybody dresses like us. And plus, we fought. And we did a damn good job. And so there's no tribe should ever try, even think about putting us down, really. It's a damn, they're foolish if they try.
Well, you know, back in the 60s, one of my traditional teachers, Richard Craker, he was Ottawahi for the White River Cherokees in Arkansas, and he back in the '60s, he was one of the guys. I think he was the last guy to apprentice under Grandfather Oscar, who's like the last Ottawahee. And but he says back in those days, he says the Cherokees, he says they wanted to go learn Cheyenne way. And he said the Cheyenne are great people, very friendly, but we basically, by the 1890s, there wasn't much left of the Cherokee religion, but the witches.
And then they became so damn Christianized.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
And to this day, there's so many of them that are Christians.
That's right. Absolutely.
So they don't. They better slow down. They want to talk about the Sioux. We have gone out and done a hell of a lot, I tell you. When we brought our Sundance back, that was pre Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
And we went ahead and did it anyhow and defied the governmental authorities
mm-hmm.
to try and stop us. And, boy, the missionaries really came after us.
Mm-hmm.
But we won. And, of course, thank God AIM came along, and we did rely on AIM.
Mm-hmm.
And AIM protected the one Sundance, the key pivotal Sundance, in which the priest was going to come in and say his Mass and make everybody pierce on Saturday. And the fourth day, of course, Sunday, the Lord's Day. And we stopped his ass cold. And from then on, even the Catholic Church, they transferred that dumb son of a bitch. They got him out of here because he was really hurting the Catholic Church big time. And now most of the Sioux youth, they're embarrassed to even mention that they're Christian.
Mm-hmm.
They may go to a Catholic school for a good, better education.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, they're Indian when it comes Sundance time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the Cherokees, all the tribes, they should actually pay homage to us, but they won't because it's a goddamn jealous of us.
Well, I hung around while I was on the road and homeless. I hung around Walsenburg, Colorado for a few months, and there's a group of Membreño Apaches. That have been Sundancing there for a long time,
uh-huh.
And Jaime Perez was associated with them for a while, but they established a Native American church back in the mid '80s, before the word Aztlan was even on the radar, and they were getting a lot of guys to stay out of prison and stay off of drugs and stay off of.
It's about the best medicine against drugs or
mm-hmm.
alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And we got these young studs that when you're 16 to 26, you don't know your ass from a hole in the ground, you get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see your buddies go to jail or you've been in jail or whatever, and you start to wake up. And a lot of these younger Indians see the older Indian
mm-hmm.
and in the Sundance and sweat lodging. So they mosey over there. Next thing they're doing, they're sweat lodging. Next thing, they're taking a vow. And they're doing 4 years in a row up
mm-hmm.
to six, sometimes 12, 14, 15.
Mm-hmm.
And it straightens them out. I mean, we have hundreds and hundreds of these young guys.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have other tribal people coming from all over that come to a particular Sundance, and they come back every year, and they're
mm-hmm.
clean. But nobody knows about that. But yet this is hundreds and hundreds of young guys,
yeah.
28, 35, 40. And it's happening. I'll go to a Sundance this summer, and there'll be 100 and some dancers there. And my nephew's in his 12th Sundance. And a lot of times, because I'm an older guy, and they all know about my standing up to priest and being a lone Sundancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they generally will have me be one of the pipe acceptors.
Mm-hmm. Well, my friend Dave Wilson, he tried going down. He even had a Bear Clan Navajo elder stand up for him, you know, to go down to Rocky Ridge at the Navajo Sundance, and
mm-hmm.
they were hassling him, and so he was invited to up to your neck of the woods.
Open Sundances now are the thing. Very few closed Sundances anymore. Might be a family Sundance or something like that, 8 dancers, 6. But the large Sundances are open, O.P.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Crow Dog just adopted.
Crow Dog, you got to give him a lot of credit. And Crow Dog, nobody, you cannot criticize Crow Dog because no one has done what he has done.
That's right.
He's been in jail over it. And,
mm-hmm.
and the Sioux way is you cannot criticize anybody unless you have done what they
mm-hmm.
have done.
And Talks to White Buffalo. He's a friend of mine. He used to live up in your neck of the woods, and he knows all of your elders, and they know him very well. And he's
and all my elders are dead.
Mm-hmm. And well, they used to live near Denver, and they used to stop off at his house all the time on their way to Tommy North was his show business name.
A lot of Canadian Indians are coming down now. Mm-hmm. They have preserved their culture and their language, Crees, and they're doing Sundances, and they're coming to the Sioux Sundances and making their connections. There's a big interchange there.
Mm-hmm.
So things are, I think, very positive.
Good.
I see it from a very positive standpoint.
That's good. Well, you know who James Flaming Eagle Mooney is, don't you?
Who's that?
He was the guy that went to jail in Utah for peyote.
Who's that?
James Mooney.
What's his name?
James Mooney.
James Mooney?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's old, isn't he?
A little bit older than I'm, I guess. I guess he's probably in his 60s.
He's that young, huh?
He was doing prison work in Utah when I was living there in 95. And I knew him. I knew him before all that stuff. And I'm going to be interviewing him.
Is he a Native American church type guy?
Yeah.
We don't have anything to do with that. We keep that away from them.
They're peyote way. But
it's hallucinatory, and we don't really.
Mm-hmm.
We think Vision Quest is enough. You Vision Quest on your own juices.
Yeah.
Fasting. I mean, we're just not into peyote. We're just, and also they got Jesus, and I don't see any mixing of a goddamn human man god created by humans.
Exactly.
I'm not into it. I don't dilute my spirituality with this Jesus guy. Zero.
I'll tell you, I've been going toe to toe with a few people on that subject too. But anyway, tell us about your book and what
which one?
Doing. Well, your new one and
spirituality for America. Let's see, rebirthing, Earth wisdom, Earth saving wisdom from the indigenous, and that's just the secondary title. What happened? And then I wrote a book, Spirituality for Spain,
mm-hmm.
Rebirthing Celtic wisdom from the indigenous, and that's in Spanish. And I got an interpreter over there, just about finishing it up.
Great.
And then I have Spirituality for British Isles, Celtic Arthurian
mm-hmm.
wisdom from
wow.
the indigenous. And what happened, the Celtics have been wiped out. And there's no real knowledge of Celticism because the church got in there and diluted everything and Christianized it. So the Celtics, my theory is, in the Eastern Indian, we're so similar, even our symbology is the same,
mm-hmm.
that, and they're earth-based, they're not man-based.
There's one guy,
but women are very high in the mm-hmm. Celtic bardship.
There's one guy named Philippe Sauvage that surfaced 10 or 15 years ago, and he claims to be the last in the interesting story. I'll send you a link to
send that to me on email.
It's really fascinating what he's been up to. He's involved with the Fireburn Doctors. They encourage people to if they get any kind of a burn to call in and I don't know what they do, but they do some miraculous things and
well, they work on spirits
mm-hmm.
and they're focused. Dr. Barry Fell, he's dead now. He studied Ogham writing in New England, and his theory was that the Celtics were over here for quite some time.
Sure.
And that could be one reason why the Eastern Indian
mm-hmm.
and the Celtic is so related.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you take your Iroquois, they're bigger people, and the Vikings and your Celtics, too, were bigger than the other Europeans. And so then we're Mongol blood, and they're bigger than Chinese. So your Cherokee, Iroquois, Sioux, there's another one I can't think of right now, but anyhow, they were all larger people, and their noses are so far more prominent,
mm-hmm.
and they're not Asiatic noses, although the rest of us does look very Asiatic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we're a cross between Celtic, Viking, and Mongol, and of course we're nature based. That's just my theory. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Fell is really, I studied his stuff, and I'm not convinced of anything. It's all mystery.
Well,
but
I lean
toward the fact that we probably were influenced by the Celtics.
Well, the Powhatans told the English when they got here in the 1600s that that they were being visited up to the 1500s, just 100 years previous, by the Norse.
Mm. So anyway, spirituality for America is simply trying to educate these poor, dumb son of a bitches, and that's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
They're stupid. They've got this resurrection, rapture, and some other damn name, and they ignore the exponential math that Creator has. Land does not reproduce. It doesn't increase. Human does exponentially. There's 9 billion right now, and within a short time, maybe 10, 11, 12. Eventually, we're going to be stepping on each other, and mm-hmm. the heating of the planet is going to be worse and worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And China is the only country that's doing anything about it. And so I try to bring all this out to the Washichu. But what gives me hope is science, mostly Washichu scientists, are on our side, and they have probed and probed, and they also have given us communication.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a possibility that, and also Europe, especially Western Europe, Spain, England, all that, they detest organized religion.
Mm.
And so there's hope there. But now we have the South, and we got these nuts, these Tea Party nuts, that are really hurting our politics and our governing. And so it's going to be a standoff. We'll find out what happens. Does Obama get reelected or does he not? You know, but it's going to be a very pivotal turning point. But in my spirituality for America, I just issue out a lot of warning, and I give them some of our ceremonies to take a look at, where spirits come in and make predictions, and they all come true. And so what I'm doing is showing our spirituality to try to educate these people and get them to start thinking that the Earth Mother needs to be protected. We have to all go back to the values of the old Indian. If we don't, we're going to lose our planet. That's it.
If it isn't already too late.
Yeah. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. We were kept this, our part of the hemisphere, pristine. The Mississippi was blue at one time. The Missouri was blue. Animals were not extinct. You know the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not overpopulate. The man didn't get married until he was in his 30s. He had to prove himself, and he wanted to prove himself. And the Crazy Horse picked less than 700 men to go down and stop General Crooks 10 days before the Battle of Bighorn. And Crooks was advancing, and there's going to be a three-pronged attack. So, and Crazy Horse, Sidney will ask him, why are you not picking the veterans? He said, because the young guys listen to me, but also I don't want... If I pick a whole bunch, I don't need them. If he had a Winchester in his hands and he cocked it and pretended like he's riding a horse with both hands free, and that was one reason why we won so dang many battles. And the Army had only one hand to shoot through 45-70. They didn't have any Winchesters. The corruption in the War Department kept the best weapon in America away from them. And we had that firepower of 10 to 12 rounds versus one single shot. The second shot would jam on a 45-70. The Army just, we just, under Red Cloud, it was no match.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he says, a sister's or an aunt's or a mother's cry is not as lonely as a widow's cry with children. And that's why he picked the young guys. Well, they listened to what he'd say, but also, if they got killed, it wasn't such a loss, you understand?
Yeah.
And but what it showed is, and we kept our population down real big time. We kept it down all tribes. We did not overpopulate. And we did everything right because we saw how nature did it, and God is the best teacher, way better than some goddamn Washitu in a book 2,000-3,000 years old. That's just my, that's where I see it. So I bring all that across in my Spirituality for America.
I'm glad and you're doing it.
Huh?
I'm glad you're doing it.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it. And I don't, nobody criticized me anymore. If they do, I don't hear about it. Well, Crow Dog had a big, big, big honoring for me, and the whole Rosebud tribe came out and cried, and I had a circle arena, and he stood, told everybody about how the three of us, Sonny Larvey and, damn, I can't even think of what's his name, but he was a singer, and me, and how we stood up against the missionaries, and Buddy Red Bull.
Yeah.
And so, and then all the people cheered and women cried and all that. And if I get criticism, it'd be from the Christians, but there's damn few Aunt Sues are ever going to criticize Ed McGaw because they know what the hell I did, you know? So under Fool's Crow and on Bill Eaglefeather, and I'm damn glad I did it, you know? What the hell?
I don't know that I've ever really read any criticism about you on the internet.
What's that?
I don't know that I've ever seen any criticism of you.
Not too much. There was, 10 years ago or so. But that's pretty well vanished now, especially Facebook. Facebook is really, they get to see the person there on Facebook. I mean, you've seen some of my stuff. And I don't, I just tell it like it is, you know, what the hell. And it is. We're desperately in deep, deep danger. And the Native American is an example, is the last example, it's the only example, as far as I'm concerned, that is still with nature, with Creator.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a place to go. So many people say, oh my God, I thought this all my life, but now I need it just explained to me one time, and now I understand. I've heard that over and over and over and over, especially from these adopted Indians. I just met one at the pickleball tournament. God, a beautiful guy, 50 years old. He had won gold, too, in his bracket. God, he was, and here he was Indian, and he didn't really know it. And I said, you look Indian. He said, well, I kind of think I am, but I don't know. He says, I'm adopted. He had black hair, and I took my hat off, and I still got kind of black hair yet from my old age. And I looked at his arms. I said, you don't have any hair in your arms. No, he said, I don't. And I said, how about in your chest? He lifted up his pickleball shirt, and he's bare, just like me. And then I said, you're either a half or a quarter. And then we started talking. He's reading my books now. I just got an email from him, and he's just a super player. And he lives in St. Cloud, and he wants me to, when I get back, to come up. And he says, I'll give you a lot of. He's way better than I am. Well, he should be at his age. He said, I'll give you some good pointers. I'll be up there, so don't worry about it. So I got myself a good friend. But I've had this happen many, many times where adopted Indians had no chance to know what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talk to them and give them some advice or knowledge, whatever you want to call it. They blossom. They beam.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been, regardless how they were raised, that blood is so, it's there. The spirit is there inside of them.
Mm-hmm. Y'all call them lost birds, don't you?
Huh?
I think that. Do y'all call them lost birds? I think that.
I don't know. Yeah.
That was
most guys. I don't know. I don't know any young guys anymore.
Yeah, I was talking about the ones that were adopted and went away.
Oh yeah, the adopted. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Years ago, I was reading about that in some circles they were called the lost birds. And that they
lost birds. Yeah, yeah, I've heard that.
Oh, that's.
But boy, I tell you, they're hungry. In fact, I got a nephew that found us. He was a illegitimate son of my brother's, oldest brother, World War II, and he traced and found us. And he's a wealthy architect in Hawaii, but he comes back and sees us, and he's found home. He's found home. And he stayed with me here in my place in Hill City and all this and that, and my daughter and her husband, and he's just happy to, and he's so happy that he became an Ogallala.
Mm.
He's thrilled about it. And he's coming back now for the Sundance. My nephew will be in the Sundance, and so he's going to come back and see his first Sundance. And hell, he's damn near as old as I am.
Wow.
He's really in good shape. Really a good guy. He's very. He played for Southern Cal. He's really athletic like his dad was. And we just fill him in. We just fill him in on what his father was like. And grandma and grandpa, the whole. He's just thirsty. He's just thirsty, thirsty, thirsty. But he's happy. You know, he found his home. And he's got a happy marriage and all that in Hawaii. But the other side of him filled out. And that I can see where an adopted kid wants to have that. You've got to fill out that other side, if you can.
Yeah.
And thank God for the organizations that help you do it, you know. And so then they swabbed my mouth, and I had the DNA test and whatever. I don't understand that, but it proved that he is my nephew. And then the tribe just gave him, they just enrolled him. In fact, he was out here about 2-3 weeks ago, and the tribe now has enrolled him.
Oh, that's neat.
He is one happy guy, you know.
That's neat.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's damn good. Thank God. The modern communication that we have nowadays, you know, it's all the Creator made it, but it never got to bloom because of all the stupid organized religion and Great Inquisition and all the barriers that organized religion has put up before science could bloom. And now it has, and we got a ways to go yet, sure, but it's really come around quite a bit.
Well, you know, Redbird Smith was, he brought back the Kitua Society back in the 1800s, and he said, you know, he says our power has been overshadowed by the dominant power. He says, I think it's just for a training. He says we have a particular mission, and you know, he thought some good would come of it, I spoke with one Kitua elder, and he felt that because we had been, you know, our people have been involved with human sacrifice, he says I think we had it coming.
Yeah, they probably.
And you know, there's everything's a mixed bag. You know, I don't care what you look at it, politics or religion or whatever. Everything's a mixed bag, it just seems like. I've looked at both sides of the political spectrum, and you know, I'm a libertarian, you know, and I got friends in the Tea Party, and you know, they get at my throats sometimes.
What's a libertarian? What do they do?
Well,
what do they do?
We basically, you know, believe that, you know, that you ought to stick with the Constitution, but you know, as long as you're not doing something that is hurting somebody else, you know, it shouldn't be regulated, taxed, or whatever, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And so,
do they believe in higher power?
Oh, sure, certainly.
Okay.
They're not a religion. It's a political belief. But you know, I look at the way I look at the political scheme is that the liberals are more charitable minded.
No, God.
And the conservatives seem to be less concerned. Now, I'm talking about, you know, just as a spectrum.
No question.
And I think this is the whole thing that we're looking at. But I see the real problem that we got in this country, and I saw this 40 years ago, was a poor public education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway.
And there was a lot of prejudice. There was a lot of,
oh, yeah.
And stereotypes. And Eurocentricism. That was rampant when I was going to school. So many Indians were just ashamed of being Indian because you felt inferior. And even me, when I was in high school, hell, I knew I was inferior, but I accepted it. And I just thought the white man was the smartest thing ever, and Indians were stupid. And it took going into the Marine Corps finding out that
Cherokees felt the same way about white people. We loved white people. We loved all the stuff that they did, all the technology and the new stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They turned around and bit us.
And now I'm on the other spectrum. I'm thinking of white people, a lot of them, not all of them. There's a lot of brilliant, real good white people. And smarter than Indians in a lot of ways. But there's so goddamn many stupid ones. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And the ones in down south are just, man, they're Neanderthals.
I know.
And then I like women's rights, and I like gay rights. I'm not gay, but damn it, I just hate it when people pick on us. I don't know, it's the other side of me. I'm a real warrior in that area. And I think a lot of people think I'm gay, but I don't care what the hell they think.
Well,
I'm going to stand up for the gays.
In the time that I was homeless, I hung around with Jews a lot, and I started studying the Torah.
Oh, yeah, Jews, yeah.
And
I like them.
And, when we were in trouble, we got in financial trouble back in 2003. If it wasn't for the Catholic Church, man, we'd have been in helping us out. And, what happened was I was living with a bunch of Indians in Missouri, and they got the idea that I dropped a dime on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they kicked us off the property. It took them, 3-4 years to figure out, and their lawyer finally called me. I had introduced their lawyer to them. And he was at my throat for a while, and he finally apologized. He says, "Hey, I looked into it," and he says, "I actually heard the recording of the guy that dropped it." And he says, "It wasn't you." But it wasn't for the Catholic Church, when that tribe picked
well,
it out. Yeah,
I like Israel to be in the Mideast because at least the Arabs get a chance to see where women are treated very equally.
Yep.
And the Jews treat their women real good, and
they better.
And the Arabs, I think, treat women terribly, and I have no very little respect for Islam because of the way they treat their women. It's terrible, and the Jews is the opposite. So it's good for them to have that window in the Mideast to at least show equality. And we have a ways to go there, but man. It's a good thing I'm not a dictator because if I was a dictator, I'd do some real strong things to bring back a lot more immediate change. That I just hate to see how all these women in the Mideast are just treated like shit.
Yeah.
Stoned and can they be divorced and just over anything.
Yeah.
Guys got about 2-3 wives, them old bastards, and they pick up a 15-year-old and buy her from some son of a bitch. And I mean, I just don't go for that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It's like being cruel to animals. I don't, I don't go for that either.
Yeah.
So that kind of shit. I don't know. I really touch on it, but I'll probably touch on it a little bit more. And I haven't really completely done. I can still make changes and. Spirituality for America, but I might pop some of that stuff in there and really come out pretty strong as it is. Mother Earth Spirituality is 45 times reprinted, but is very mild. And at that time, 20 years ago, you'd be surprised how much change has happened in 20 years. But Mother Earth Spirituality is a nice book, but it's kind of wimpy compared to what. But at the time, I had to be it this way. And to get published by HarperCollins, you can't just really say exactly what you feel. You got to get through these editors. Well, Spirituality for America is going on Kindle, and I don't have any editors.
Great.
So it's going to be a lot more harder hitting, way harder. And it's needed. It's needed.
That's good. That's good.
So we'll see what
I'm glad your voice is out there. We need we need our elders, Ed, and When I was on my journey, when I was homeless, I stopped for 2-3 weeks, with the Talks to White Buffalo, and he's Sundance at least 4 times with you guys.
Wow.
And we both just came to the conclusion that hey, nobody's listening anymore. He says I quit talking because nobody seemed to be listening. And
well, people are so damn wrapped up in the economy that they don't care about historical.
Yeah.
Spiritual nothing. They want to keep their job and get their kids and try to save their kids, and their kids are moving in with them. They have to. It's chaos out there. It's real chaos.
Well, it's getting families to get back together. I mean, this is the way it was before World War II.
Yeah,
we, we've drifted away from, you know, a nuclear family.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
It's
going to be interesting. I mean, the overpopulation is the absolute challenge for America. There is no question about it. And it's happening right now. And when the planet heats up, and weather change has been tremendous, but I could possibly be God, and it's just a theory, it's just a supposition, but God made everything, Creator. Well, Creator made nature and gave us everything to observe it, eyes, ears, now instruments, to observe Creator's direct making. Instead, most of human listens to man and ignores Creator and even downplays it. And many, some sects make fun of it.
Like a lot of hard science people just...
Yeah. And so now Creator is taking its exponentialism, its math, and it's going to show human that human was wrong by listening to man instead of what Creator directly shows you. That's kind of what... how I really see it in a nutshell. And I think there's going to be tremendous fatalities,
mm-hmm.
tremendous suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And who survives, I think they'll be educated by results. And I got that in one of my last Facebook statements. Results. Results will educate.
Yep. Well, you know, that's what this word of spirit that came to Lee Standing Bear. I'll send you a link to it. I don't think you can argue with it.
Oh, God, yeah.
He basically is saying the same thing, that something's going to happen. But, you know, when this whole climate thing started, if you go back to the late 80s when this first started, it wasn't just the Earth that was heating up. It was everything in the solar system. And
I didn't know that.
Yes,
part,
that's
yeah.
true. And now we've got, you know, these rumors about this Planet X thing there's a big debate going on, and all kind of the government's acting very strangely. You know, they ordered 400 million rounds of 40 Smith & Wesson hollow point. That's enough to run a war, a civilian war inside this country for 10 years if you go by.
Who ordered that?
Homeland Security.
Oh, Homeland Security. Oh, dude. To defeat us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a couple of years ago they ordered, you know, several million underwater body bags. And, there's been some strange, one of the things I dabble in is I watch what people are talking about over in the conspiracy theory side. And there's some weird things going on. And I used to be a State Defense Force officer back in the mid-80s, and this is state-only military. And I decided to go back and drill a while with the guys here in Tennessee to see what was going on, and there's been changes, you know. So I keep a foot in both worlds, and I'm actually torn between the two of them.
And nothing wrong with that, you know.
And I gather information to try to put together what's going on, but you're right. There's going to be purification.
Yeah,
it has to be.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be horrible.
The weather will be the main factor.
Yep.
And the heating. In some places, we'll get more rain and this and that, but overall, it's going to be a lot more heating of the planet. It's just obvious. It's carbon dioxide, but it's going up there, and it's making changes. Simple. Simple, simple, simple. Well, we're not quite an hour, but... that's about it for me.
That's fine. And before you go, though, let me, if I can find this, vision that Lee Standing Bear had.
Yeah, Standing Bear. Was that Luther Standing Bear?
No, this Lee Standing Bear.
Lee, huh? That's one of the younger guys.
No,
right?
He's the guy that runs Monotaca.
Oh, well, his name is Standing Bear,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we had a Luther Standing Bear that was very oratory and had brilliant statements.
I'll have it up here in
Lucifer's
here
temper.
It is. Okay, I've almost got it. I didn't even know about it. Okay. He says, this is published March 1st, 2010, so it was while I was on the road. It says, a waking, walking vision was given to Grandfather Bear beginning on the night of the winter solstice, 2009, and continued until the solar eclipse and the new moon appeared on January 5th. On January 5th, under the weight of heart problems, conflicts in the environment, and this dream, he suffered a heart attack and was hospitalized until January 11th. On February 25th, doctors inserted a pacemaker in his chest. And he says, in his vision, he saw no disasters in political or economic upheaval, even though there were certainly will be those things in 2010 and beyond. You have to kind of follow this. And he says he saw no illnesses or war, although humankind will suffer tremendous losses from these destructive forces in the coming year and beyond. It's strange the way it's written. You have to kind of ride with this. He says he didn't see darkness or evil. He says, but those things will continue to invade our space and time. Now the person that wrote this says that Bear continuously deals with negative forces and upheaval in the lives of those who are in contact with Monotaca. He says he deals with his own physical afflictions through, brought about by age and old war wounds. By the way, he was in the Corps, I believe, and he was finally given his Silver Star that he earned in Vietnam. He was quite a warrior. But basically, he said that his vision was liquid, flowing, and filled with changing colors of light. He stood on a sacred mountain and listened to the wind songs blow through the trees and around the rock faces. Swirling colors of the rainbow appeared and disappeared like swirling smoke, and the earth moved, swaying at first, then slowly spinning in a counter-sunwise circle. The giant grandfather bear of ancient times, the great cave bear, appeared and began to dance around an oak tree. He danced around the tree four times and then lifted his left paw and heavily drug it downward across the bark four times, scratching out deep markings and river-like patterns. The bear then stood with his paw resting on the tree as he bowed his head and muttered in a deep rumble mixed with a low whimper as if he were praying. After a time, the bear's thick coat began to change colors. It changed from black to dark brown, then to a cinnamon red, and finally the color of his fur faded and became white. The spirit bear suddenly spun around and faced me, and his red-black eyes stared intently into my eyes. His eyes sent a prolonged message in his language. The words were unclear, and the long stare into my eyes became longer, louder, and words of the message came faster and faster. Over and over, Bear repeated the confusing message with his mind-splitting gaze. Then pictures began to flash in our mind, and we realized that the bear's eye words were being interpreted into images that were hazy, undefined, and without form. The confusion and power of the spirit bear's eye words overwhelmed us, and we suddenly collapsed to the ground and cried out, "Help, Creator!" I laid there a long time in a deep sleep. I was awakened by the screeching and a loud thump of something landing on the ground nearby. My body was covered with a thick dew, and moss had become to form on my arms and legs. Leaves and dirt had blown over me like a soft blanket, and the world around me seemed to have changed somehow. The spirit bear was gone, but the paw markings on the oak tree were still there, but faded and covered with moss. Three eagles and four hawks flew overhead. Each in its turn, the four hawks of different colors swooped down and the talons bared screeching. Two landed in the field and two landed in the oak tree as the eagles continued to circle above. The hawks in the tree spoke in unison. "We come to give Bear a message, so you must listen and know it's blessed. The days of yesterday are gone. You have crossed to the other side of time, and now you will understand the wonder and mystery of life in the beyond. The universe has changed into what is no longer. What will be is what was in the beginning. Life has not started over. It's simply moved upward in the spiral of time. Your being remembers all that was, and what will be shall unfold with great alacrity. The spirit bear imprinted the path and the depth of the breadth of our journey, and says, but you must remain here and become prepared to accept the message of tomorrow." And he said, "Well, who are you?" And he says, anyway, basically, and I'll send you a link to this, but he just said that that the people that are trying to live Earthway will be preserved somehow and will rebuild and start over again.
Uh-huh. And probably, you know, that could very well be.
Somehow, you know, and some, you know.
Because these dummies are the celebrity watchers and soap opera Susies and six-pack Joes. They're nothing. They're brain dead. They're blanks.
Yeah.
And they were put here just like the rest of us. And this is a big testing ground, and they just could care less. And so they don't belong going beyond where other people that have used observe what Creator has made. There's no relationship. That's how
absolutely.
I see it.
Absolutely.
So well, yeah, send me.
Well,
to
I
me.
Appreciate you, and we'll get this out to the folks out there, and so they'll be able to listen to it in about an hour.
Okay. Good.
Well, thanks a lot, Ed.
Yeah, I'll see you. I'll see you on Facebook.
Good talking with you. I have sent a couple of links, and I'll send you another one here pretty quick.
Yeah, thanks
hey,
a lot.
You,
good seeing you. Yeah, bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Oh, yeah.
sweet dream.